Boom! Wallop! Wow! It's the new Now TV combo. Exploding with
one.
The biggest TV shows in town.
Two.
Super reliable unlimited broadband.
Three.
And our brand new smart box. Want it all without the snip of a contract? Now you can. To recap, the Now TV combo. TV, broadband and smart box. All with no contract. Want to hear the sexy legal bit? I bet you do. Now you can. 18 plus Now TV network areas only. Renews until cancelled. See nowtv.com for terms.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is your host for Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm Jess Root, and we've got Seth Cox on the line, who will be joining us shortly. And welcome to another episode of our all-Cardinals show for Revenge of the Birds Radio. Only all is not well in Cardinals land this time, as the Cardinals somehow managed to lose a very winnable game on the road, falling 25-13 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And naturally, that's what Seth and I are going to talk about tonight. It's recording on a Tuesday night, as is normally the case, and you're likely listening to this on a Wednesday or on a Thursday. So it's still a little bit fresh in our minds. 25-13 loss by the Cardinals to the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were not only without Ben Roethlisberger for the game, they lost their left tackle during the game. They already were without Marquise Pounce, his starting center. But Michael Vick left the game with an injury, and it was third-string quarterback Landry Jones who came into the game. And in the second half, only threw two touchdown passes. And, you know, after the Cardinals had a 7-0 lead and a 10-3 halftime lead, things sort of stopped being any good. A game in which we'll talk about mirrored a lot of the way the Cardinals played, and the Cardinals lost to the Rams at home. So the Cardinals now sit at 4-2, still in first place in the NFC West. Not the end of the world. There was another surprise in the NFC West, as the San Francisco 49ers managed to pull out a win, and likewise, the Seattle Seahawks lost at home. So they lost two games in a row. Once at home, falling to the Carolina Panthers, Cam Newton, who is having himself a fantastic season to start off 2015. But we're not going to focus on that. We're going to focus on the Cardinals, a team that, I guess the theme is, nobody beats the Cardinals but themselves, I guess what you can call them. But we've got all Cardinals show, Seth Cox coming on the line. First of all, Seth wants to tell us, wants to talk about, lead the show with this. Why football is dumb. So, Seth, why is football so dumb?
The Cardinals lost to the Steelers with their third-string quarterback, backup left tackle, and backup center playing. Football's stupid. I just don't
understand. And we were talking about this off the air, but I have seen the comments from Steelers fans. They saw Landry Jones in the same light as Cardinals fans saw Ryan Lindley. And Cardinals fans, you know what you think about Ryan Lindley. As great a guy as he is as a quarterback, he was one of the historically worst quarterbacks we've ever seen. And that's the type of guy that the Pittsburgh Steelers fans were talking about their guy. And what did he do? He only threw two touchdown passes. I mean, the first touchdown pass, that was a very, very, very good throw. And then it was like the Cardinals stopped knowing how to play defense, sort of, letting Landry Jones pick them apart, and suddenly Martavis Bryant is Antonio Brown or something, and yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and it was an unfortunate, and we'll get into this, it's an unfortunate thing, and I am, we talked about it in the St. Louis loss, and I'm just very unopposed to the notion that a team beats themselves. So, I mean, as we get into that, you know, we can talk about it a little more, but I hate that sentiment, because one, it discounts everything that the other team did to beat you, but two, do good teams really beat themselves that much? Like, that's two times in six games.
Let's start about that. So we take away from the loss. I'm going to say it again. It's what Bruce Arians said. It's what Steve Keim said. That the Cardinals didn't lose to the Steelers. The Cardinals lost to the Cardinals. And there's, now, mind you, there's some evidence for that. Carson Palmer can't hit a wide open John Brown in the end zone. Nah, never mind. If we go back a few years, that's the same type of throw that got John Skelton benched when he missed a wide open receiver in the end zone. The three completely boneheaded penalties that the Cardinals received in the first half. Bobby Massing with unnecessary roughness, just, you know, jumping on a guy on the ground. Chris Johnson can call for a chop block, even though I blame Jonathan Cooper for that, because Chris Johnson was already low when Cooper decided to engage with the free rusher. Then Kevin Minter, you know, getting flagged for whacking a guy on the helmet after a play was over. Just really, really
undisciplined. And the second guy always gets caught in that situation. I know Cardinals fans are mad about, you know, oh, that, you know, he was just retaliating. The second guy always gets caught.
Always. On top of that, you've got...
Yeah.
You've got the late interception. This, the unacceptable, that in a Burns and Gambo talked about it the other day and on Monday, and it really hits the nose on the head. He said, that's the Cincinnati Bengals, Carson Palmer. But I say the Cardinals beat the Cardinals because, you know, they made mistakes. There weren't necessarily, especially on the offensive end. Defensively, they did screw up. They were unable to defend Landry Jones and Martavis Bryant. They just didn't seem to know what was going on, because there wasn't any tape on either of those guys recently. I like to say the Cardinals lost to themselves, but maybe that's just trying to make me feel better. And perhaps on some level, that's the message that the coaching staff wants to put out in the media for the players' sake, because if they start believing that it's not, you know, they're beating themselves, if they're beating themselves and they're losing games because of it, that's something that in the locker room you're like, well, yeah, they didn't beat us. And maybe that's something they just don't want their players to start believing. They don't want them believing that they could lose to these other teams, that the only way they're going to lose is to lose to beat themselves. At the same time, I see that as encouraging and discouraging. I wrote a piece about it up on Tuesday. The way the Cardinals are playing is both encouraging and discouraging, because really what we haven't seen a team do is simply go out and just beat the Cardinals. Yes, the Rams played as perfect. I pointed this out in the last time when we talked about this, that the Rams played a perfect game plan and they executed it perfectly. But they didn't really, I mean, that didn't beat the Cardinals. It was the mistakes that they got the Cardinals to commit. And maybe that was kind of the saying that they did that. The Steelers kind of the same way. They looked awful in the first half. Cardinals completely dominated that first half, and then I was telling you before the show, I still don't exactly know how exactly they lost. But it's encouraging because, hey, if they're beating themselves, that's easy to fix. It's discouraging because why the heck are they beating themselves? Are they a good team? Which is what you were asking. Do good teams really beat themselves?
Well, and that's where I'm kind of at. Like, when you look at, like, good teams definitely have bad games. Like, I'm okay with that. Like, and so that's why I'm okay with this thought that the Cardinals just played bad. Like, they just, I mean, they couldn't, like you said, Carson Palmer missed some throws. Then he started to press and really, you know, force the ball. The offensive line, again, just struggled. I mean, we've talked about it before. Since the return of Massey and Iapati, this offensive line hasn't really looked that good. And so, you know, you look at it and you say, all right, I think they just played bad. But this whole, like, we beat ourselves, I think what it what that says to me is that you're making unforced errors. And I feel like if you're making unforced errors, then that's what bad teams do, at least to me. Like, bad teams go out there and, you know, miss open receivers and, you know, run routes wrong and commit stupid penalties. Like, that's what bad teams do. Good disciplined teams, like, you look around the league, look how bad, and I talked to my friend about this, look how bad the Denver Broncos offense has been this year. I mean, the Cardinals basically played like the Denver Broncos have been all season in that game against Pittsburgh.
And they're undefeated.
And they're 6-0. Like, they found a way to overcome. And something that, you know, you and I have talked about a couple times, and that I've preached on a little bit, was I don't know how this team handles adversity yet. And the first two games where they've had some actual adversity, where things, you know, haven't clicked exactly, you know, gone the script that everybody was expecting, they failed. And, you know, not in the failure type of way, like, oh, the season's over, just cancel it. But in the failure type of way of, like, what is this team in general? Are they a Super Bowl favorite? Are they a Super Bowl contender? Or are they just a playoff fodder team? Like, is that, like, I don't think we're at that point at all. But I don't think that they're Super Bowl favorites. I think, and I said this last week, I think this was the game that kind of separated that before we even played it. Like, if they handled their business, if they went into Pittsburgh with them down, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, and then Kelvin Beachum got hurt, and, you know, Mike Pouncey's out, then, you know, a great team, they handled their business. Even if it's a close game, they handled their business. But maybe they're just really good. Or maybe they're just good. And they're beating or they're winning games, you know, that go their way. And when things, you know, when they do get punched in the mouth, they don't know how to respond yet. So maybe they still have, I shouldn't say maybe, they still have 10 games to really figure out how to respond. But they also only have, you know, maybe 3 games before they get into that meat of the schedule where they're going to play a lot of really good teams.
And maybe in part that the games that they won were simply too easy. And so they got in the habit 2013, 2014. They were used to starting slow and having to come back and make plays late in the game. I see this being twofold. One, they're not used to it this year, so it's tougher. Two, their defense isn't quite as good, I want to say, than the first half of last year or how it was in 2013. Maybe it's not quite the same shutdown, because the offense, I have to say, the offense has been more of the story this year. They've been the stronger unit. And if, let's face it, Carson Palmer, as great as he's looked this year, you have to look at his career. He is not on the same level as your Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, guys who you know down the stretch are going to make throws. They're going to get the team down there. They're going to do. Carson Palmer isn't that guy. And what have we seen in the two games where it's been absolutely critical to make plays down the stretch? Now, we saw some of that. He was very clutch in many of those games, but we've seen down the stretch in these games when the throws were there to be had, or when the moment was biggest, he doesn't quite do it. Against the Rams, he just badly throws some very easy throws to make, very winnable throws. And then just the inexcusable miss down for the interception, just forgetting to see the safety, not making the pre-snap read, or just thinking that they bit on the play action. And I think that's where it is the defense isn't quite what it was, and so you can't expect it to shut down everybody every time. They're good about getting turnovers, but when they're not getting turnovers late in the game, they aren't able to exactly shut everyone down the same way they could do that a season or two ago. And maybe that's James Betcher and his play calling, maybe.
Well, and part of it is this. There's two, I guess, consistencies in the two games they've lost. Both of those games they've lost, there has been very conservative play calling on the other side from them. And I think in both those games, we've seen that. And what happens is when, as you said, the secondary, which is the best part of the Cardinals' defense, isn't able to make plays, then all of a sudden it's on the defensive line to get a sack. And you know, not just the defensive line, but the front, you know, whatever it is, and they're in five or six, you know, depending on the defensive or the backfield. But, you know, you look at it and they can't get sacks. Guess what? What did we talk about before the game? How stupid the idea of pressures are. Because Landry Jones was pressured on both of those touchdown passes, and he threw touchdowns. Like I said before, pressures are a useless stat unless they are pressures.
A productive
that
pressure.
A negative play. So an interception, force the quarterback out of the pocket and make him throw incomplete, something of that nature. But just a pressure, that's what those, you know, 40 quote unquote pressures that made, who's the guy now? Dwight Freeney, you know, the third best edge rusher in terms of pressures in the NFL. And guess what? He had the same two pressures, and it just wasn't good enough. And you know, if he finishes either of those plays, guess who probably wins that game? But, you know, you go back to it, and I think when you have conservative play calling, and you don't have a team that can create actual sacks and you know, in drives in the way that we saw even the Steelers do against the Cardinals, then all of a sudden, it's easier for them to complete passes. It's easier for them to then run the ball. And I think I am in agreement with you that, yes, there is some definite drop-off in terms of defensive ability, maybe. Maybe not ability is the right word, but defensive, what's actually happening. But I think when you look at it overall, I think a lot of it has to do with if the Cardinals' offense isn't forcing the other team to throw the football a ton and attack downfield, then it doesn't play into the Cardinals' hands, so to speak. And all of a sudden, their really dynamic defensive backfield becomes very stagnant, maybe. I don't know what the word is that I want to use, but, you know, it becomes very easy to pick apart. And we've seen that now in two games against, you know, in my opinion, inferior competition. And I think that's what's most disappointing is you look at the overall, you know, the big view of the season, and when you look at it, the Arizona Cardinals are 4-2 and lead the division by two games, and the Arizona Cardinals should be 6-0 and have
they should be running away with this division.
Yep. And people say, oh, it's two games, you know, that's a lot. Well, they played the Seahawks twice, so that means they have to win both those games. Yes, I know there could be a lot of games in between there, but that just basically means right now they have to beat the Seahawks twice to maintain their division lead. And that's not something that you want to count on.
Right, especially since we saw them control the division for the first three quarters of the year. We saw them control the season, you know, we saw them control the division for forever, for, you know, the first 12, 13 games, and then it just petered out, is what happened. No. Connection is you there, Seth?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I apparently had a little blip in the connection, so I was talking about the Cardinals. I think last year they had the division in control for 12-13 games. All they had to do was win one game against the Seahawks, and they put that division away. They were unable to. Now, granted, they were with Drew Stanton and then, you know, Ryan Lindley. That's not, you know, let's not forget that. But the same situation could happen here. Any key injury could put them in a situation where they, and especially with a tough schedule down the stretch, not without the possibility of having them, you know, fade like they did last year.
Right, and you look at it, and to me, you always just want to build as big of a cushion as you need. And so, you know, the Vikings aren't looking terrible. You know, the Bengals are a very good team. You know, the Browns, for whatever reason, can put up points on teams. You just look at all of it, and you say, okay, this isn't just going to be an easy, you know, these aren't just easy games. And, you know, that doesn't even mention the four divisional games they still have. Oh, and the Packers and Eagles, who are, you know, while the Eagles have looked garbagey at times, they lead to the NFC East, and that's a December game in Philadelphia. So, you know, all those things are why 6-0 is a much more important aspect than what's being played right now. Well, they have a 2-game lead on the division.
Well, so if you were to put a 1-10 value on your concern, where would you put? I would put it at 4. There's concern, but I'm still going to only put it at a 4 because they're still in control of the division, and I still haven't seen another team just really do anything to the Cardinals other than the Cardinals frustrate themselves with stupidity. So I'm putting the level of concern at a 4, but that could ratchet up to a 6 or 7 and not too long.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you and I talked about it on the air, and I tweeted it out during the game. Until the end when Martavis Bryant took the ball, you know, apparently 90-whatever or 80-whatever yards and ran by the entire Cardinals organization, I really felt the entire time the Cardinals were going to win that game. Like, I just, the entire time I was like, okay, this is just, you know, they're not playing well, but they're so much better. They are so much better. The Steelers can't cover them. You know, they have, Floyd was playing his best game of the year. John Brown was out of his mind. You know, he had the full, but whatever. And Fitz was consistently fifth again. So I was just waiting. So to say, like, where I'm at, I think, you know, like, I'm with you, 4 or 5. Like, I'm mildly concerned because it's disappointing that the two best teams that they've played, they've struggled with and lost to.
Yes.
And I think that's what you're concerned about more than anything, is you're wondering why that is happening against, you know, teams that are actually of quality. But again, I don't think either of those teams are of the Cardinals' quality, especially that Steelers team, you know, with Vic and then Landry Jones at quarterback. You know, like I told you last week, if Ben Roethlisberger played, that's a loss I can stomach. But with Roethlisberger out,
that's one of those things that's a gotta win game. It's not a must win, but it's a gotta win reputation wise.
Yeah, if you want to be considered, you know, what Cardinals fans and you and I thought, and one of the elites, you know, one of the top 5 teams in the NFL, you have to be a team on their third-string quarterback. And I think that's where it's at. Now it's like, okay, you know, they're still a top-10 team, but I don't know how much, you know, I don't know how much more they have to go to get to their top, because I thought, you know, like you said earlier, I thought they had got there because they were just beating down bad teams, but now all of a sudden it's kind of back to the, all right, let's watch this again.
So let's talk about some of the parts of the game. Let's talk about Carson Palmer first. You know, Pro Football Focus gave him incredibly high marks. Bruce Arians called his play average to poor. I wrote about it myself. I have an article about that on revengeofthebirds.com, written Tuesday morning, and it is about that, how actually both are correct. But you look at grading it like Pro Football Focus. They look at every single play. Was it a plus play? Is it no? Did he impact the game play positively? Did he not impact it? Was there a negative impact on the game? So I can see how that would be, you know, from a coach's perspective. When you've got a quarterback like that, you've got to produce when it counts. And if you're just moving 20-20, yeah, that's pretty average. And when you throw a couple interceptions in there, that's pretty poor. Overall, I thought Carson Palmer was good until it mattered. And I saw more. The throws between the numbers were great. The throws down the field were good. His accuracy on ball placement has been very good, except for, you know, there are a couple of throws outside the numbers that you think that he probably wishes he had back. The first interception, I don't blame him for. Jermaine Gresham should have caught that ball. It was a tough catch to make, but it got into the window and it hit him in the chest. He's got to make that catch. Second interception, that's all on Palmer. That was a stupid throw. And that was a very Bengals Palmer, who put up mad numbers and then threw a critical interception.
Yeah, and that's I think the biggest question that you and I have had the entire Palmer tenure in Arizona. It isn't if he's good enough to put up 4,000 yards. He did it with the Raiders. I mean, come on. Is he good enough to throw 25 touchdowns? He's done that basically, what, every year of his career. The question has always been, is he good enough to make the big throws in the big situations? And
sometimes he is, and we've seen it. We've seen that he can be.
Yeah, and I, you know, something that you said to me at the beginning of the season, and then of course last year, that always sticks with me, and you know, we'll find out more. But you always ask the question: was last year the year?
Like was that the magic? Don't do that again.
and that always sticks with me on throws like that. Like, because you look at it, and like you said, he missed the two throws against St. Louis, and then he missed multiple throws in this game in the clutch situation, and then had the Bengals-esque Carson pick. And so that's what always sticks with me when that happens. I go, I was just right. Man, I hate Jeff right now. and then that's when I say football is dumb. Because, you know, it's stuff like that. Like, how can you look so in command all, you know, for three quarters, and then just, you know, crap the bed in the fourth quarter? It just, you know, and like we said, that's the Palmer we are afraid of and worried about. And I'm not, you know, I don't want anybody to take this as, oh, I'm saying that's who he is this year. No. I'm just saying that's what we're always concerned about, and rightfully so, because that's been his career. And it was the last 2 years, you know, really just last year and you know, the, what, eight games, seven games the year before that he hasn't been. So we haven't even seen a full season of good Palmer. And maybe we didn't see that because he got injured last year. And so he didn't have a chance to, you know, show his other side, so to speak. So who knows? But, yeah,
Well, the concern always is remember, this is the guy that franchise is hitching its wagon to for this run. You know, not to say that there was any better option out there. There wasn't.
Oh, no, there wasn't.
There wasn't. No, no. But they're loaded up. This is a team that looks like it could be a Super Bowl contender, and they're hitching the wagon to a guy who has yet to win a playoff game. I mean, until he wins the playoffs, there's going to be that concern. Now, we look back to 2013. We talk about the conversations we had back then, and what do we see? Carson Palmer had great game, stinker. He hasn't had stinker yet, but he's had So he's had good game, really good games, and he's had a couple of games. So that's progress. But, you know, everything is heightened at this point because there's this fear in the back of my mind, Seattle's going to figure it out, Seattle's going to figure it out, Seattle's going to figure it out, and they're going to get on a roll.
Well, and they're just one game back from where they were last year. So let's not act like this is this is unfamiliar territory. Remember, last year at Game 6, they were 3-3. So that's the only difference between now and then. Now, if you want to tell me that this is a different, you know, team and the Seahawks, you know, with Jimmy Graham and then the defense is struggling, I'll definitely buy that. But I always go by the motto, they're the team to beat until you actually beat them. So they could, honestly, whenever their first game is, I think it's 11-15, so that's like week 9 or 10. They could honestly be, 3-7 or 3-6 at that point. And I'm still going to think they're the most dangerous team that the Cardinals face going forward. Oh, yeah, I know the Packers are the best team, but I still am going to think that they have to beat Seattle because it's that mental thing. It's that mental thing of we have to be better than them. You know, talking in terms of the Arizona Cardinals, they have to believe we are better than them. And, and not just, hey, we got by because everybody else beat the Seahawks, and thank goodness we didn't actually have to beat them this year.
Let's move forward a little bit, talking more about the offensive line and running. Let's hitch those two together because I think the two are connected. The offensive line, I mean, if you look at Pro Football Focus, they graded, I think it was Mike Iupati was the only one with a positive score. But Jonathan Cooper had the dumb play, that where he engaged, and it was Chris Johnson that got penalized for the chop block. Jared Valdir, Cameron Hayward is a big man, a big, strong, very good player. I saw him flat out beat Mike Iupati a couple of times. There was the hold on Gerald Valdir. I saw him whiff on a cut block on Cameron Hayward that when he blew up a play. And well, aside from the really bad penalty by Massey, I don't recall anything that stuck out that said that he was just playing poorly. But he definitely didn't dominate, and it seemed like the offensive line just wasn't in sync for whatever reason.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about last week with how much Palmer got hit, and Ezekiel Ansah is a very good defensive end, and then I think the week before that was the Rams game, right?
Yes.
Okay, so Robert Quinn is great. I mean, and so yeah, they've played some really good teams the last 3 weeks, and I know they ran for a lot of yards the 2 weeks prior, but man, their pass protection is not good. And then all of a sudden this week they couldn't run block. And I've, voiced my opinion before that, and I looked it up because I wanted to be sure of this. 9 carries in the first 18 minutes of the game and then 9 carries the rest of the game. That's a bit disproportionate, right? Like, or not 18, sorry, first 24 minutes.
Yeah, it was 9 and 24 and then 9 in the final 36, I recall seeing in the tweet.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's a bit disproportionate, right? Like, I got at the end, the fourth quarter, like, I understand that part. Like, I get it. Although they did take a really weird time to run in the fourth quarter, right? Like, the second and seven, and they ran the ball or something like that and lost 2 yards.
Well, but that's the thing that was odd about this is, and Aaron's pointed out, and so there are some validity to this. They put themselves in some stupid situations with second and 20s and first and 15s and third, and where they weren't able to run the ball. They were behind schedule, as you like to talk about. They were behind schedule, yep, on their offense, and so they were just weren't able to run the ball. They had more negative plays than they were accustomed to. Chris Johnson was getting blown up. He wasn't elusive at all. And Andre Ellington got one carry in the first series. One.
Yeah, and I just feel like the entire game was, well, that's what I talked about. The Cardinals, in their two losses, they were the ones that panicked. Like, they blinked first. You know, if this was, you know, chicken or whatever the kids are calling it these days, where, who swerves the car first, so to speak. Bruce Arians and his play calling has definitely swerved first in both of their losses, where they're like, oh, crap, like, we better throw the ball.
And that's Arians' MO. He will bail on the running game early. He just has been able to. The Cardinals have run the ball well, so he was able to keep calling the run. But he's got all these, you know, all these weapons. He's got a John Brown who's dominant. He's got a Fitz. He's got a Michael Floyd that's playing well. So it's super easy to get into that, and then forget to go back. Add into the penalties.
Oh, yeah.
Oh geez.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that happened this game, and I think you saw a lot of that in this game. And so, but to get back to the offensive line, they were bad, I think is a very good, like, nice way to put it, because, you know, and I'm trying to avoid this, I really am, but Jonathan Cooper has not been good this year, and let's just be honest. I complimented his game last week. It was, you know, his best game of the season. But you look at this week, and, you know, he gets blown off the ball more than a lot of athletic, strong, you know, good players that I can remember. And it's always interesting to me that he is, you know, he's having that struggle. So, we'll leave it at that. But I think Valdir and Cooper struggling concurrently is causing some issues in the offensive line play overall.
I have no explanation for what's going on for Valdir. Maybe there's something. Offensive linemen almost, you know, you see an offensive lineman struggle during the season, and then, you know, 6 months after the season's over, and then you say, oh, you were playing with a broken leg. I wonder if there's something lingering that hasn't been reported that Valdir has been dealing with, because he's not the same player he was last year.
No, but, you know, you go back to Oakland, right? And so, his first, what, 4 years in Oakland or five? I don't remember how long he was there, but he was kind of the player he is right now. I think last year was more of an aberration than before, and I think that's why they let him walk, right? Because they're like, well, he's good, and he is good. Like, I don't want anybody thinking that. Like, we're saying Jared Valdir is playing bad.
Because heaven knows we've seen Bradley Sowell play.
Yeah. But he's not playing up to the capabilities that he did in 2000 and in 14. And I think that's where you come in and go, okay, what's going on here? Like, what's happening? And so that, to me, is what the issue is. You know, he's struggling in both the running game and in pass protection. Obviously, pass protection is much more easy to discern because he's giving up sacks. I think he's at, what, three now on the season he's given up, and he only gave up one all of last year, and we all blame that on Logan Thomas because he's Logan Thomas. And
yeah, well, and what is it? I think he's got now three holding penalties as well on top of that, which is, that's not good. The holding penalties are killer.
And so I think just overall, I think having, you know, kind of an issue on the left side and then an issue on the right side, I think it's kind of just messed up the whole offensive line. And so I think, you know, I'm not worried about any of it, honestly, because I think that it can get figured out. And in this coming week, it should get figured out in a big way. But it's something to monitor, definitely. And then just, I think Chris Johnson had a bad game. Like I said, like the whole beat themselves thing, I get where people come from with that. But, you know, Cam Hayward and Stephon too were also kind of whooping that butt. You know, they were punishing guys. And so I think that takes away from how well they played and the fact that they, you know, out-physicaled the team. And I think in the two losses, it really seemed like to me that the Cardinals came out with an air of, we're the better team. You guys need to lay down and just let us do our work. And you know, it didn't work in either of those games.
They've stopped playing with that chip on their shoulder that they've had. They have to prove it because they've been winning big. And who knows? Maybe that's all they need. Defensively, this is a point I neglected to say just a little bit before. You know, the defense played... I mean, if you look at... There are some players who... Patrick Peterson had a whale of a game against Antonio Brown. Now, in part, again, we're going to have to temper this with the fact that Antonio Brown has not nearly been as productive as he was with Ben Roethlisberger, but Peterson continues to play at an extremely high level. Rodney Gunter, you know, after some struggles, he kind of struggled a little bit first couple of games. He's been really stout. Dalen Buchanan is making plays, but beyond that, there was... Absolutely. I mean, this is the most Marcus Golden description you will ever hear from Bruce Arians. And it's kind of like, he definitely played hard. He could have played smarter. And isn't that Marcus Golden in a nutshell?
Yeah, and that's kind of what we talked about all along. Like, he's gonna be the king, at least this year, he's going to be the king of almost plays. Like, he almost got there. Like, that's kind of where I see him going. And, you know, but defensively, like I said, outside of Calais Campbell, I don't know if anybody on that front seven, if you just line up the front seven in a base package, I don't know if any of those front seven guys are guys you go, they're not replaceable. I think all the other six are, you know, you go, okay, like, we could probably upgrade there. It's not a pressing need by any means, but I think you could look at it and go, yeah, we could definitely find, you know, probably a little upgrade right there.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where the problem lies, because if you're asking them to make plays and not your star-studded secondary, that's where you're going to get in trouble. And let's be honest. You know, one of our favorite players on this team, Tyrann Mathieu, I thought he, you know, probably had his worst game of the season, and it wasn't even that bad.
No, he missed an easy, relatively easy interception. He was out of position a couple of times, but well, defensively, the one thing I was going to say, and then I didn't say it again for a second time, this is where we saw James Betcher get out-schemed by Todd Haley. Because you could tell at some point, late in the first half, suddenly this Pittsburgh Steelers, the Steelers suddenly were trying to get Martavis Bryant involved. And guess what? It was getting him involved that eventually put them away. And the Cardinals didn't have an answer for it. I think that's where we have a clear example where someone got out-coached. He got out-schemed. Betcher was out-schemed by Todd Haley. Not that Todd Haley hasn't done that consistently over the past couple of years with the Steelers offense, which has been quite productive when they're healthy. But goodness, Haley really did a number on Betcher there by, with, well, they just didn't have any answers for Landry Jones or Martavis Bryant. That sounds kind of absurd.
Yeah, and I think something you and I have hit on before, and what our, you know, biggest concern was coming into the season on the defensive side of the ball, wasn't the scheme, wasn't, you know, the personnel, was anything like that. Wasn't even Betcher the coach. It was Betcher the play caller as the game went on. And one of the things that we always talked about with Todd Bowles is in the second half, it was very, very rare that you saw Todd Bowles get out-coached. And it basically became a game in the game itself to how good Todd Bowles would look in the second half of the game and how good the Cardinals defense would look. And now it's kind of the opposite. They come out, they look extremely strong. They have their definitive work that they're doing where they're, you know, using exotic looks and confusing teams with those six or seven defensive backs. And then in the second half, the other team adjusts, maybe starts running the ball a little more, leaning on the guys, and then when they get that extra guy in the box, all of a sudden they start to throw the ball a little bit, and they find the holes in the zone. And that's, I think, what the difference has been thus far, was just the in-game adjustments as opposed to the actual coaching of the game.
Moving forward, the Cardinals now sit at 4-2 in second place for the St. Louis Rams at 2-3 as they had the bye. The Seahawks and the Niners are both 2-4, but let's look into the way everyone's, myself included, I just keep thinking the Seattle Seahawks are going to figure things out. They're going to get on a roll. They're still the team that you are afraid of. But looking the way things stand, should the Rams perhaps be that team sitting at 2-3 with their next four games being very easy? Very easy. They could easily win all four of those games and be sitting at 6-3 4 weeks from now.
Yeah, but the other thing is, you got to remember with the Rams, they lost to the Redskins. So you never know what Rams teams are going to show up. I still think it's the Seahawks. Like, if I put them in order, I'd say, and I think I texted this to you. It might have been another group text. I'm in far too many group texts. it might have been another one, but I said earlier, I think that the Cardinals and the Rams are the two wild card teams. That's how much I thought of the Rams this year. I thought they were going to go 9-7. And still that second wild card. Now, obviously, with the NFC South actually being good at football again, I don't think that's going to happen. But I still think one wild card team comes from the West. And so maybe, hopefully not, but maybe it ends up becoming a three-team, you know, race to the end. I don't know. I hope not. I'd rather be 6-0 and have a four-game division lead and not have to worry about things, things like that. But, you know, thins the breaks. So I think, if I put them in order, it's still Seattle, St. Louis, San Francisco. But, you know, that can change any time.
And well, you look at the Rams, their next 5 weeks, they're playing the Browns at home. They're playing the 49ers at home. Then they're in Minnesota, they're in at home against the Bears, and then they're in Baltimore. With Todd Gurley, the part that kind of scares me, and there is a breakdown, I think I'm going to have it up for tomorrow. With Todd Gurley in that offense suddenly is very deadly because he matches exactly what they want to do. There's a lot of deception. It makes them very, very difficult to defend. Unless you are very, very disciplined.
Yeah, and but the thing is Nick Foles is a quarterback.
That's
and
true.
Unless he's playing the Cardinals, he's only okay.
Oh, forget that detail. So let's kind of look ahead to the Ravens game. I do have on tap. I haven't nailed it down, but I do have intend to have a preview show this week with Matthew Stevens of BaltimoreBeatNow.com, our SB Nation site for the Baltimore Ravens. But let's look ahead to the Ravens. This is a question you posed on Twitter, and this is kind of what we say. So if the Cardinals, and we believe the Cardinals are still a very good team, what should we see this Monday? We should see them bounce back and play very well, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't think you can expect anything less than a dominating performance. Like, I know that's a lot to ask, and, you know, you should never expect domination, but because, you know, the Ravens are professionals, and they're 1-5, and they're playing for kind of their season. But this is a home game on national TV. These are the only game. It's Monday Night Football.
Against the team who defensively, the Ravens are a mess. And the Cardinals like to chuck the ball down the field, and that Baltimore defense gives up chunk plays like nobody else.
Yep, and so I think obviously if you win, you're not going to be upset with the Cardinals, but I think you're going to be disappointed if it's not a very strong outing by this Arizona Cardinals team, because as we said before, talent-wise, they are, you know, they're really good. So I just don't see, you know, how they lose this game. And so maybe domination isn't a fair, you know, request of them to see, but I feel like as good as this team is, that's not asking too much.
No, and, well, hopefully that's what we see. The Cardinals do lose Darren Fells. We get to see more Jermaine Gresham and more Troy Nicholas. We don't have any other roster moves that are set in stone yet. We might be seeing some in the next few days. But you face Joe Flacco, the elite Joe Flacco. the elite Joe Flacco. And this is the perfect game to get better, to come out angry. And really, after these two type of losses, I'd love to see the Cardinals put that chip back on their shoulders and say, hey, we still got something to prove. I want to see that because this is a team that's so talented. I have confidence in the team, but we just need to get, if those are the two hiccups, if those are the two beat themselves games that we don't know, maybe the Packers do blow them out of the water late in the season. I don't know. But it's no more just playing badly. If another team plays really well and the Cardinals are playing well and the other team wins, that's an acceptable loss, if there are acceptable losses. But when you're just making stupid stuff where you're getting penalized, you're turning the ball over, just inexplicable stuff, or even there are turnovers on passes that should be caught, that's can't have that.
No, and you have to see a strong performance from the Arizona Cardinals, I think, this week, because you want to make that statement that you are still one of the best teams in the NFL, and you know, not just the NFC, but in the NFL, and you're still a force to be reckoned with. And maybe the Ravens are 1-5, and you know, a play from being 0-6, but this is still a Super Bowl champion team. What, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? So it's definitely not an easy win, but it's one where you feel like you can make another statement.
And that should bring us a close to the All Cardinals show for Revenge of the Birds Radio. We've talked Cardinals and their loss to the Steelers. We've looked a little bit ahead to this Ravens game coming up, and the plan is that I will have a preview show with Baltimore Beatdown later in the week. So be on the lookout for that. Again, thank you for listening. Again, this is a show. This is recorded. If you, of course, you can subscribe to the show Follow us on Blog Talk Radio, which is where the show is hosted. iTunes, you can find it there. Get it on your devices. And, well, of course, head to RevengeTheBirds.com to continue talking Cardinals with the best Cardinals fan base that I know of. I'm your host, Jess Root. That's Seth Cox. Thank you for listening to the All Cardinals Show for Revenge of the Birds Radio. Have a good night.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at Facebook.com/RevengeOfTheBirds.
It's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe Iced Range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.